and walk right back out. Directly across the street was the entrance to the nature preserve Aaron had found on the map before leaving the Tiber campground hostel. It was a wide, paved road with a vehicle gate blocking the entrance for any cars, bordered by trees on both sides. It looked suitable enough. We ran across the small highway to the other side, dodging the madmen bus drivers who were careening down it, and walked past the vehicle gate. I went into the trees next to the entrance to take a leak. I immediately stumbled back out of the trees, stunned. Oh, my God. You guys have to see this. There were condoms everywhere. I'm not exaggerating when I say there were probably over 1,000 of them. Used, nasty condoms. It was like someone drove a skank truck back there and exploded it. Corey took multiple pictures. No one's going to believe this otherwise. Just the sheer number of them. Just astonishing. We walked farther into the place, down the paved road, until we were out of sight of anyone driving along the highway or otherwise. We slipped into the woods there and walked along a dirt path. We spent a couple hours investigating the place until we found a spot that was well isolated and hidden from view from any of the trails. It was an open area of woods with a huge oak tree in the middle of a large open circle of pine trees. Home? Home. End of chapter 16. Chapter 17. The Nature Preserve. Ostia and Litorania, Rome Province, Italy. The Nightly Ritual. Get in your hammock. Fight your way into your sleeping bag. Usually the sound of traffic very near. The campground nearby is blasting dance music. You're wide awake, contemplating burning the place down. Journal entry, August 10th. August 6th, day 44. The nature preserve turned out to be quite an interesting location. First of all, there were the prostitutes. Early on in our stay, we discovered them while walking across the road to the campground to fetch, steal, some water. They sat along the highway in little plastic lawn chairs, usually just messing around on their phones. A car would pull up, they'd hop in, give the guy a peck on the cheek, and off they'd go. Or the guy would get out and they'd disappear into the bushes together. This aptly explained the nest of condoms we had discovered, or Condom Alley, as we coined it. Unbeknownst to them, these girls solved one of our biggest problems. We had no way to get blowjobs. We had no chairs to sit on in the campsite. So one day when Corey and I went to get water and happened to see one of the hookers getting picked up, we thought, hey, just look at that chair sitting there ready for the taking. We repeated this process 4 times over the course of the next few days. Every day we would steal a chair and the next day there'd be a new one out there. Where were they coming from? They certainly weren't new. Some were broken when they arrived in our possession and we had to lash them together. I never did see a Acme Hooker Chair Supply company when in Italy, so maybe it'll forever remain a mystery. They knew we were taking them, too. I mean, they had to. Corey and I talked to one of them almost every day on our way to, quote, work, busking in Ostia. We'd be on our way back to the campsite from the bus stop, and the conversation would usually go something like this. Ciao, Corey or I would say. How are you today? I'm good. How are you guys? Great. It's hot as hell. Ah, yes. It's a very slow day today. How did you guys do? Not too bad. Enough to buy some food. You? Not many customers today. Hopefully better luck tomorrow. The busking here was something that took a while to get the hang of. We'd been playing music on the street here or there throughout the trip, but this was a little different. We were playing almost every single day here, 5 to 6 hours per day. On top of that, the bus system made the experience unnecessarily stressful. As previously mentioned, the Italian bus system was the equivalent of a drunken hamster circus. I described it as absolute chaos and disorder in my journal. So every day we'd walk out to the bus stop outside of the nature preserve, have a friendly chat with the prostitute, and then wait. Sometimes we'd wait 5 minutes, sometimes we'd wait an hour, usually around 30 minutes or so. We'd pass the time by sitting there and flipping rocks towards the opposite curb in a game we'd invented, a testament to our boredom. This bus would take us back to the train station, and from there we had to walk about half a mile to another bus stop, and then finally catch a bus to Ostia. Neither of these stops had anywhere to sit, and both of them were directly in the sun. I told you about the heat wave already, right? I did? Okay, as long as we're on the same page here. I felt like Satan's sweaty butt plug out there. This wasn't the worst part of the daily commute, though. The tricky business was getting back to the nature preserve. The problem was that the buses stopped running around 10 p.m. The prime time for busking, we discovered after much research, was from 8 until 10 p.m. So if we wanted to make the maximum amount of money each day, we'd have to play until 9:30 p.m. and then pack up swiftly and run to the nearby bus stop and hope we didn't miss it. Problem number two was, did I mention how unreliable the bus system was? Sometimes the bus would come at 9:30, right as we were running up, and other times it would come a half hour later. This wouldn't have been that much of an issue, but if you'll remember, there's still another bus we had to catch. So if the first bus showed up late, you could find us running as fast as we could with our instruments to the next bus stop. There were quite a few close calls, and one time we actually missed it, which sucked. We had to walk 2 miles back to the nature preserve after busking out in the hot sun all day. We ran a little faster the next time the first bus was late. All of this was timed almost perfectly, or imperfectly, depending on how you look at it, to coincide with the closing of the little campground store just across the road. There we would buy dinner for the night. We ended up keeping a large store of non-perishable food in the preserve with us, like pasta or rice, but we usually wanted some type of meat to go with our daily pasta dinner. All of this while trying to dodge the campground manager who would often stop and harass us. If you are going to camp here, you need to register at the office. We aren't camping here. But then, he would ponder for a moment. There was literally nowhere else for miles that we could be staying, to the best of his knowledge. Why are you here? We're buying food. We eventually learned to avoid him, running past the office when he wasn't looking or ducking behind shelves when he entered the little store. My favorite part was sneaking behind the office and ducking below his window where we would fill up our water bottles from their hose. The water tasted absolutely disgusting, but it was the only fresh water source available to us within a reasonable distance of our pirate camp. All of this was learned over time, of course. In the end, we would spend a total of 3 weeks living in the nature preserve. The original plan, as you may remember, was for Corey and me to busk while Aaron worked a temp job. That plan faltered from the very beginning. Aaron didn't want to get a job, which he made pretty apparent. My argument was that, seeing as he was the one so obsessed with money, here was his chance to do something about it. He was negative about the whole situation from the very beginning. "Nobody's going to hire me around here," he'd said. "Well, you have to try, man. Everyone has to pull their weight," Corey told him. "I already earned my money, though." "If you're so worried about money, that wouldn't matter to you," I offered. I felt like his father. He didn't want to take the buses alone at first, so I had to go with him. I figured it was best that way anyway, because I knew if I wasn't there to supervise him, he would probably just go and lay on the beach and then come back and tell us he hadn't had any luck getting hired somewhere. I took him to Litorania, where I then had to go in and ask places for him. I'd been learning quite a bit of Italian when I had the opportunity, using several apps on my phone. So I taught him how to ask if they spoke English and how to say work in Italian. The next day, he went by himself to Ostia to look and came back empty-handed. "There aren't even any restaurants up there, really." Corey and I went that way the next day to go busking and counted over 20 of them. But it didn't matter. He gave up after that second day. 2 days. He refused to look anymore. Instead, he just sat in camp all day while Corey and I went to play music. He whittled things out of wood or wrote in his journal. Hell, I don't really know what he did to pass all that time. Then he would bitch about it to us, that he was bored sitting there all day. Well then, go get a job. I think it was more an issue of pride. He felt like he'd already paid his dues, so he didn't think he should have to do anything else. He made that pretty apparent throughout the whole trip, even later when I was working my ass off in Asia to make money while he sat on his laptop watching movies. Corey and I, however, wasted no time in our efforts to reach our goal of breaking even for the month. Every day for the first week was spent trying out new places to play. Street corners, storefronts, places like that. We had trouble at first, getting kicked out and asked to move on pretty often. After a while, we found a perfect little spot situated on a corner by a four-way intersection. People had to stop there to wait for traffic, and in the evening, all of the beachgoers walked right by us on their way back to a train station located across the street. "Ah, Mimico," he exclaimed. "You can play out in front of my store any time. I love the musica." This guy was awesome. We played there for a week and a half or so, and he'd come out every single day and throw money in our tip case. He'd even urge anyone walking by to throw in money as well. Every day we'd get off the bus, head to our spot, and he would greet us. "Hey, mi friends, come stai?" "Molto bene, grazie." We were averaging about 20 euros a day there for 4 or 5 hours of work and 2 hours or so of travel there and back. One notable tip we received at that location was from someone on a third-story balcony. We heard someone yell, "Hey, music guys!" from far above after we finished a song. I walked out onto the street and saw a man leaning from his balcony. "For you!" He held out a ball of aluminum foil and tossed it down to me. I caught it, and inside was a fair amount of coins as well as a 5-euro bill. I thanked him and returned to our little corner to keep playing. Maybe the most notable tip that occurred at this spot was when a mother and her autistic child came one evening. Kids always meant money. They were fascinated with Corey's drum, especially, and we knew if we got the kid dancing, then the mother or father would be obliged to give the child a tip so he could throw it in our little tin. So, as it usually went, the mom gave the child a few coins to throw in the case. But this time, the kid approached slowly and then suddenly grabbed the little tin with our tips and ran down the street with it. We were all shocked, especially the mother, who stood there for a moment, unsure what to do. She took off down the street, yelling after her child, and Corey and I continued to play and tried not to laugh. She caught up with them and they returned. She supervised intently as the kid put the tip case back, and I nodded a smile and a thanks to the mom. She kept gesturing apologies as they turned to walk away, when suddenly the kid turned right back around, grabbed the case again, and took off. This happened yet another time before the mother, amidst hearty apologies in Italian, held onto the kid and practically dragged him away. We finally had to stop playing so we could hold onto the tips long enough for her to make it out of there. The mom was the only one not laughing. The kid thought it was the funniest thing in the world, and Corey and I were right there with him. We had our good days and bad days out there, but we at least made something every day. I made another trip to Litoranya at one point, a 10-minute bus ride south of our campground, where I had seen a bar and restaurant with a sign for live music. Now, my Italian wasn't really advanced enough for salesmanship, so I did a little bit of research on my phone before walking in and asking for the manager. They introduced me to the owner, whom they said was named Salvador. "Ciao," he said with a smile as he walked from the kitchen and shook my hand. "Ciao," I replied. "Parli inglese?" "No, piccolo inglese," he answered, holding his finger and thumb up to signify very little. Well, shit. Here we go. So I rambled forth the Italian I had rehearsed. "I play music. I'm from America. I will play here for Euro, etc." He was nodding his head as I talked. Holy shit, this is working. He's actually understanding what the hell I'm saying. "Si," he smiled. "Gioca," meaning you play. "Si, si." Ah, molto bene, I exclaimed. Quanto? He asked. How much? I'd been so worried about just being able to communicate with the guy, I hadn't even thought about the price. Cento euro? 100 euros. He shook his head in disagreement. No, no. 60? 60 euros. 60 euros e cibo e birra, I countered. 60 euros and food and beer. He outstretched his hand with a smile. Ah, deal. Yes, deal. We scheduled a show for the following Friday. In total, Corey and I ended up making over $500 US from playing music during our 3 weeks in the nature preserve. We were literally playing music to keep food in our bellies. I had been getting along better with Aaron for the most part. It helped that we weren't spending so much time together and that we had a routine and some scrap of normality during our stay in the nature preserve. Every day, Corey and I would head off to work while Aaron stayed behind to watch the gear. When we arrived back at camp in the evenings, he would have the pasta cooking and almost ready for the sauce and meat we'd be bringing with us from the store. I had lashed together a table out of branches upon which we organized our food as well as played chess and card games. In the mornings, we would enjoy a piece of fruit and a pastry of some kind, and for lunch we'd usually have a Nutella and peanut butter or tuna sandwich. Although later in our stay, when Corey and I realized that we were making decent money and doing all the work, we did secretly treat ourselves to some ice cream or fast food while we were out busking. I stand by my belief that we earned it. Okay, maybe not the 3 times a week we ended up buying it, but oh well. Something overall started to change when all of this was happening. Aaron could see that we were finally bringing in money. Anytime we needed to pay for something, whether it be a short 1 or 2 day hostel stay, food, or anything, he wanted us to spend the busking money. I started to become suspicious that he was intentionally saving the cash in his money belt, which he obviously considered to be his and his alone, for Thailand so he could control everything again. I went along with it because I honestly didn't really care about the money unless we were starving somewhere or dying under a bridge and he wouldn't spend any. It came to a head, though, when he brought up Australia one evening. I think when we get to Australia, I'm going to get me a job in one of the mines there. I guess you make like 30 bucks an hour, so I could work there for a few months and save up some money to bring home. Okay, Corey commented. Have fun with that. Count me out. I agreed. Yeah. I mean, you can do whatever you want, man, but I'm not spending my time in Australia working in a damn mine. I'm going to enjoy it. It's fine if that's what you want to do, but we'll probably have to split up because I'm going to want to stay in Perth where I can do some busking and stuff. Well, you'll still share the money from the website with me, though, right? He asked. I was flabbergasted for a second. Aaron, no, man. I'm sorry, but no way. I have no problem sharing with you while we're in this together, but I'm not going to sacrifice money that Corey and I will need just so you can have more money to take home with you, especially when you'd be making more than enough to get by. Well, that's not very fair, man. That's all our money. He started to get upset. Excuse me? I had waited to hear those words since Corey and I had started bringing more money to the table. I seem to remember you talking about how you had your money and everything. Well, this is money that I've earned. I built the website. I maintain it. I write it. I edit it. I do all the work. I mean, I didn't mean like my money when I said that. I just meant that I had earned it myself. No. Don't try to backpedal now, dude. That's exactly what you said and how you meant it. You made Corey and I feel like pieces of shit, like we were bumming money from you or something. And now you see us making money and suddenly want to go back to it being everyone's money. You can't just switch it around whenever it benefits you. Corey stood up silently and walked over to his hammock, avoiding the altercation. Aaron rebutted again. When did I ever tell you no, you couldn't spend money on something? I don't know. How about when I was dying under a fucking bridge a couple weeks ago? Well, I meant I mean, I was talking about how I broke my back for this money. I worked my ass off for it. Aaron, you did literally the same thing you always do. The same job, everything. You didn't work any harder because of this trip. I not only worked my ass off day in and day out building the website, planning this trip, and playing music, but Corey and I also sold off virtually everything we owned for this trip. Yeah, but I cut him off. No, dude. I know you have money at home still, even though you won't admit it. You're going to come back and live at your parents' house with no bills and a stack of cash, regardless of whether you work in Australia or not. And I'm going to come home with nothing, but with a house and vehicle to pay for. I don't bitch, though. This trip is worth it to me. I don't give a shit that I'm going to go home broke as fuck. But I'm not going to give you money that I'm working hard to earn, money that I need, so you can have more stashed away in a box at home. Well, my photography work is on the website. If we split up, I'll remove your photography if you want, split everything I have in my account from the website up to that point, 50-50 with you, and then that would be it. It went on and on like this for a long time. It was the worst argument we'd gotten in thus far. It came to a head with us screaming at each other across the camp, both of us red in the face. I stood my ground, though. There was no way I was going to give him money that I needed to survive if he was making more than enough and not even traveling with me for that matter. I just didn't understand his views on money. When it comes to traveling, I want to enjoy the experience. I don't really care if I go home broke as long as I have a good time on the trip. I don't even know why he took the trip up to that point. He was genuinely more concerned with having money when he got home than he was with having a good time. He told Corey and me he'd never even been to a concert. Only went out to a restaurant a handful of times in his life because it was way cheaper to just go to the grocery store and get food. He just never wanted to spend money on anything. Arguments aside, we tried our asses off to talk some sense into him every single day of this journey, just to try to get him to loosen up a bit and enjoy life, but no luck so far. After that argument, I was absolutely furious at him. I was starting to think we'd never get along, no matter how hard I tried. I talked to Corey about it the next day when we were waiting for the bus to come. "I think I'm splitting up when we get to Thailand," I told him. "Like, going home?" "No, just leaving Aaron. You're more than welcome to join me. I can't take it anymore, man. I don't think we'll ever be able to get along. I'm going to wait and see what happens, but it's not looking good." "I'll probably just go home if you do that." "Why?" "I don't know. I just think we started out as a team, and if it's not that anymore, then I'm out." "That doesn't make any sense at all. You just want to go back to Katie, don't you?" I was referring to his girlfriend back home. He'd been homesick recently. I didn't care much for his girlfriend. Most of our friends predicted she would cheat on him within weeks of us leaving. "No, that's not it. I don't think it'd be the same if it wasn't the three of us." "Whatever, man." I knew he was lying. "You can do what you want. Just know that I'd be more than happy to have you with me. We'll see what happens if it comes to that." Sleeping was an interesting business while living in the nature preserve. We each had our hammock set up in our own little area. I had brought back a bunch of cardboard while busking and set up a little floor in front of my hammock. I also lashed a bunch of smaller branches together and made a little shelter to provide shade in the daytime. Corey had tied off between two large trees at the edge of the camp with no cover or anything. Like I said, that guy can sleep through anything. Aaron set up his hammock between the large tree at the center of camp and the smaller one 10 or so feet away. Every morning he would complain of back pain from his hammock. He'd set it up too loosely, so he slept in what was almost a horseshoe shape. He ended up sleeping practically in a sitting position, with both of his legs straddling the hammock at the bottom. Corey and I tried to encourage him to tighten up the hammock, but he just wouldn't listen. He said he couldn't sleep with it tightened either. Almost every single morning he complained about not sleeping well, until Corey finally told him that he wasn't allowed to complain anymore unless he fixed his hammock. I still, for the life of me, have not a clue in the world why he never bothered to tighten that hammock. 3 weeks of sleeping like shit. It wasn't just the hammocks that kept us awake. There was also the campground across the road that liked live music. As you may have already figured out, I like live music too. Just not when I'm trying to fall asleep. And certainly not every night. Imagine, just as you're lying down to sleep, a thumping bass kicks in. And then they'd crank up the PA and the band would join. It felt like the speakers were deliberately pointed right at us through the nature preserve. It was annoying, but at least it was good music. They had the same cover band there most nights, which played mostly classic rock. But damn, I just wanted to sleep. Finally, there would be a lull in the music around 2 a.m. You would just fall asleep and then wake up with a jolt and a loud boom. A few moments later, the campground would start setting off fireworks. And this happened almost every night. And before all this happened, there was the task of actually getting into the nylon hammocks with your sleeping bag. It was quite the process. Step 1. Unzip mosquito net attached to hammock. 2. Lay out sleeping bag in the hammock in an organized fashion, lying the travel pillow at the top and leaving the bag zipper open for easy entry. 3. Sit in hammock to begin entry. 4. Pillow slides under sleeping bag, everything bunches around you. 5. Swing back and forth perilously as you attempt to locate opening of sleeping bag, which is now an insulated ball of chaos around you. 6. Success! Enter sleeping bag. 7. Try to pull sleeping bag up to your shoulders while it's being squeezed into your body from all directions by the sides of the hammock. 8. Pillow is in the small of your back now. 9. Okay, pillow is now in position and you're successfully in the sleeping bag. 10. Fuck, it's really hot. 11. Slide sleeping bag to waist to escape heat. 12. Shit, it's all bunched up under you now. 13. Maybe if you just slide the backside of it under you while leaving it unzipped. 14. Success! You fall asleep. 15. Is that highway seriously still this busy? It's like 4 a.m. 16. Fuck, it's really cold now. Reach outside of hammock and grab hoodie and then attempt to wrestle it onto your body like a straitjacket. 17. Well, now I have to take a leak. 18. Get out of hammock and pee. 19. Repeat steps 1 through 9. 20. Fuck, it's really hot and bright. 21. Continue to lie awake in hammock, pondering the course of events during your lifetime that have led you to a life of sleeping in a hammock. 22. Weep silently. 23. Exit hammock. As if all that wasn't complicated enough, there was also the adventure of masturbating in a hammock. It had been 2 weeks since I'd choked the brontosaurus, so to speak, probably the longest I've ever went since I first discovered the thing. It's as awkward a thing as one would expect, masturbating in a hammock. The nylon sides of the hammock don't give you much elbow room, so you're forced to expand your legs to the side, Indian style. You're swinging, you're bouncing. Whoops, the branches on the tree are making a little bit of noise. I hope nobody figures out what that is. And when a successful, quote, end result is achieved after much determination and balance, well, you quickly realize during the ensuing moment of clarity that you most certainly did not think this through at all, and are left looking for some kind of paper towel or tissue paper, which, as you can guess, aren't in plentiful supply at your local nature preserve. So you find the next best thing, and then, hours later, when Aaron walks over to your hammock area to fetch something, you have to say, "Heads up, I wouldn't touch that sock while you're over there." This, believe it or not, is still not as ridiculous as Corey's method, which he openly shared with me while waiting for the bus one afternoon. I just walked out in the middle of the woods the other day and just stood there and cranked one out. Kicked some leaves around and walked back to camp. Huh. When in Rome? End of chapter 17. Chapter 18, 9-5. Ostia and Lituania, Rome Province, Italy. If you think adventure is dangerous, try routine. It is lethal. Paolo Coelho. August 23rd, day 61. Once again, the attempt to quit smoking failed in a, no pun intended, blaze of glory. What had started as picking up a cigarette butt here or there turned into walking alongside the highway outside of the nature preserve and hunting them. Then, when there were no more to be picked up on the road, we started taking buses to the train station and searching there. One particularly effective tactic was to wait until a group of buses was about to leave, as people would throw half-smoked cigarettes onto the ground before quickly jumping on their bus. This would often yield much more tobacco than your usual butt, which is smoked down almost to the filter. I had eagle eyes when it came to this sport. I could spot a half cigarette from 20 yards away. We'd returned to our camp with a worn-out tobacco bag full of disgusting, stinky cigarette butts and empty all the tobacco out onto a notebook. Then we would roll up our hobo stogies and light up for a moment of nasty bliss. After a couple weeks of this, I finally put an end to it and told Aaron and Corey that I was buying a bag of tobacco. Surprisingly, it was Corey who put up resistance. I told him the sad truth. Cigarettes were all I had left. Food was decided by the group. Sleeping was inhibited. Water was from a dirty hose. We took shits in a shallow hole in the ground. I jizzed into dirty socks. But I could smoke cigarettes whenever I wanted, provided I found them on the ground. It was still mine when we were buying tobacco. He relented, and I took a bus to the store right away to get some sweet, sweet store-bought nicotine. And that was it. We were smokers again. We'd had a great show at the restaurant in Lituania called Albatross and hit it off with the staff there. They were a fun bunch and taught me all kinds of Italian swear words that I wasn't learning from the language apps on my phone. They thought it was hilarious. Salvador, the owner, particularly enjoyed teaching me to say, "Ero secco, nico nico." "What is it again?" He repeated the phrase. "Say." So I said it. "No," he urged. He motioned for Adriano, the waiter, and spoke to him in Italian. Adriano could speak a little English and had been acting as interpreter for everyone else. "He say, speak the first part slowly, and then the second half with passion." "All right," so I tried again. "Ero secco, nico nico." Salvador spoke to the rest of the staff in Italian, and they all burst into laughter. Adriano stopped long enough to fill me in. "He say he's Sicilian and means, I am a little, little gay." Corey and I both started laughing, and I flipped the bird to Salvador jokingly. "Vaffanculo," I directed at him, which they had just taught me, meaning, "fuck you." They erupted in laughter again. "You learn, you learn." We all had such a great time that the owner offered to book us again for the following Friday. We gladly accepted. After our show was over and the restaurant closed for the night, we were treated to a huge feast with all of the staff. Then we got a lift back to the nature preserve from Adriano and his girlfriend Tanya, who also worked at the restaurant. Even aside from our shows at Albatross, music was going great. We had moved to another busking spot on a pier in Ostia a few blocks from our last spot. We were averaging more money there, and the spot was conveniently located near a gelato shop and McDonald's. The phrase "cheat meal" gained a whole different meaning as Corey and I enjoyed secret meals at McDonald's on some days, and cups of ice cream or a cold can of Coke to share on others. I'd also discovered that I could recharge my phone with my laptop at the nature preserve, so every few days we would bring all the electronics to McDonald's and charge them while we ate. After eating and charging the phones, we would head to the pier and play until exactly 9:30 p.m. when we'd hurriedly pack up and run to the bus stop. This was our life now. Since our electronic devices could now be charged somewhat regularly, I transferred copies of the HBO show The Sopranos to my phone, and we spent our evenings huddled together around the little screen, watching an episode or three before bed. We set up half of the box-like cajon drum and sat the phone in the corner of the wooden pieces to create a little sound amphitheater. The days passed by faster and faster as we settled into our routine. At the same time, Aaron's laziness had become increasingly frustrating. When we'd finally relented on the whole job thing, our only requirement of him had been to make the morning trip to get water from the campground, to do the cooking, and to get groceries while we were gone. It didn't take him long to talk us into taking the water bottles with us so we could stop at a fountain and fill them up before returning to camp in the evening. This just created more shit we had to carry each day to go to work, but it wasn't worth the argument. Aaron kept up with the cooking, and there were no complaints there until one day when we were making pasta. Corey and I had picked up some ground beef, a rare commodity from the little campground store, and Aaron had just finished browning it in our little cooking pot. He started to add sauce to it. "Whoa, man," Corey interrupted. "You need to drain the beef before you add that sauce." "Huh? You have to drain the beef before you add the sauce to it." "Drain it? Why?" "To get rid of the grease, man." "Why would I do that?" "Why would you get rid of the grease? What do you mean?" Corey was confused. "Well, we haven't been getting enough grease lately," Aaron elaborated. My jaw dropped and I entered the conversation. "Haven't been getting enough... Do you think grease is good for you?" He shot me a strange look as if there was something wrong with me. Yeah. It keeps your joints lubricated and everything." Corey and I both started laughing uncontrollably. "We're not cars, Aaron. We don't need grease," I managed to say between breaths. "Aaron," Corey stopped laughing long enough to interject. "Grease is fucking terrible for you, dude. I mean, terrible. Cholesterol, sodium, it's really bad for you." He really just didn't have a clue. I watched a week later as he dumped two packets of salt on a McDonald's cheeseburger and another pack on his fries. He was taken aback again when I explained that too much salt is bad for you. Actually, he didn't even believe us, and to the best of my knowledge, still doesn't. I started to realize that a lot of these habits and mannerisms that I thought were weird were not really his fault at all. I could tell it had a lot more to do with how he was raised than any ignorance on his own part. I actually kind of started to feel bad for the guy. But I was still angry about his prevalent laziness so far and shitty attitude towards teamwork. He had started taking daily trips to lie on the beach in the mornings before Corey and I left. It was irritating when I was out busting my ass for 6 hours to bring home 15 or 20 euros. His days weren't all boring while Corey and I were out working, though. One day he was sitting in his chair whittling on a piece of wood by himself at the camp when he looked up to see a disheveled old man standing there. The man started flipping him off and yelling gibberish angrily. He held up his hands and, inserting one of his index fingers into a little circle he made with the other index finger, the international symbol for butt-fucking, if you will. Aaron didn't know what to do, so he just told the guy to get the fuck out of here. But the old man stood there, yelling and screaming at him some more and kicking leaves and sticks towards him. Aaron got angry at this point and stood up with the hilariously large knife he was using to whittle and held it up at the old man. "Get the fuck out of here!" The guy turned around and slowly walked away, still shouting the whole way as he went. The whole episode left Aaron a little freaked out, as it would anyone, and he was a little sketched about staying at camp alone after that. There wasn't much we could do about it, though, considering our financial plight, so luckily he managed to get over it. The guy came back a few days later and did the same thing, except this time Aaron stood up and took off running for him, knife in hand and screaming. Apparently the guy got the message this time. Don't fuck with me. I was coming back from the campground store a couple days later and saw an old guy yelling at the prostitute sitting next to the road. He was screaming in Italian and waving his arms like a maniac while she just sat there and laughed. I waved at her and chuckled as I walked past. She waved back and shrugged with a grin. I went back to camp. "Yo, Aaron, Was that guy that yelled at you about yay tall and wearing a red hat? I asked as I held up my hand. Yeah? Figured so. I just saw him out by the road yelling at one of the hookers. One day, Corey and I were particularly late making it to the train station to catch the last bus back home to the nature preserve. The first bus had been late, assumedly because the driver was sleeping or something. We saw them do that at the bus stops frequently. We were dropped off at our stop at the time the second bus was usually leaving, so we hauled ass back to the first bus station just in time to hop on. We collapsed out of breath on a seat and looked up to see a guy and a girl run up to the bus as it was starting to pull away. The guy smacked his hand on the glass door, and the driver stopped and opened both the doors so that the couple could step on. They both appeared to be in their 20s and were carrying backpacks, which was weird in this neck of the woods. Ostia and Litorania are not touristy areas. They walked up to our seats as the bus sped onto the street. "Parli inglese?" the guy asked. "Yeah, we're American," Corey answered. "Okay, do you know of anywhere around here to camp?" "Well, there's a campground on the beach, but it's kind of expensive." I looked over at Corey. They looked cool enough. He nodded his head at me in approval. "I know of another place, but you can't tell anyone about it. We've been staying there for a couple weeks." "By the beach as well, or..." "Yeah, kinda. It's in a nature preserve up the road." He looked at his companion, and she shook her head in approval. "Yeah, sure, sounds fun." "Cool," I smiled. "We have some food if you guys are hungry," the girl offered. "I was going to offer the same to you," Corey answered. "You guys are more than welcome to have dinner with us." Chapter 19. Return to Happy Days. Rome, Italy. You may have the universe if I may have Italy. Giuseppe Verdi. August 31st. Our arrival back at the hostel Happy Days in Rome was a jovial one. Showers, toilets, coffee, and the company of other people were all welcome changes in our environment. There was much to do during our short 5-day visit before we would be leaving Europe. The website had been pretty neglected, not surprising considering we had been living in a damn nature preserve for 3 whole weeks. We still needed to be making money. We also still needed to do some research on Thailand. We had to book a hostel for our arrival and formulate a game plan for Bangkok and thereafter. Currently on the agenda was a Thai massage, ridiculous amounts of food eaten every day, and a night of drinking. Also on the Bangkok list of things to do was a ping pong show, but we'll get into that stuff later on. Aaron was delegated to research Bangkok while I worked on the website during the day and then busked with Corey in the evenings. Aaron was pretty good at that kind of stuff. It made me wish I'd asked him to help more during the initial planning of the whole trip because he was really useful at this during our time in Rome and afterwards. It took a lot of pressure off me since I was so busy working on the website and everything else. The pressure intensified when there was a huge snafu as I was moving some stuff around on my GoDaddy hosting account. This is essentially the storage bin of a website, the closet that holds all of the information such as images, content, and a theme. The theme is the slick paint job of the website, making it aesthetically pleasing. Without a theme, you'd just be looking at a bunch of plain text on a white background. This is controlled with something called CSS. CSS is like the painter. It tells the theme what to show to a reader. Background colors, fonts, border sizes. It also formats everything so that it doesn't show up as a jumbled mess of photos, text, and menus. Without this hosting account to store everything, there is no website. Just a domain which shows an internal server error to whoever searches for it. So you can imagine my dismay when I accidentally wiped out my entire hosting account. I had only been trying to organize the damn thing. If you'll remember in earlier chapters, I had originally designed the site using traditional code, but later switched to WordPress to save time, frustration, and the eyes of my followers and readers who would have thought I designed the original website on a goddamn calculator watch. When I had done this, I never got rid of the old files. I was worried that having them on there may cause errors in the future if WordPress attempted to pull a file from the hosting account and saw two with the same name. So I set out to clean everything up a bit. Ironically, that very issue of having folders with the same name is what led me to accidentally delete the wrong one. My hosting provider offered no restore option, and once you accidentally nuke one of your files, it's done for good. I deleted the folder, noticing immediately afterwards that the WordPress directory was not listed under the remaining one. I thought. Well, that can't be good. I visited my website to check it. Internal server error 500. You have successfully butt-fucked your website. Fuck! Fuck, 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 fuck! The other hostel members all looked over at me in worried confusion, as if I was having some kind of medical emergency. Fucking goddamn son of a bitch! Piece of fucking shit, GoDaddy! Fuck you! Are you alright, bud? Corey looked up from Facebook on his cell phone. The website's gone. Huh? Aaron asked, astonished. I deleted the wrong folder. Everything is gone. You can't just, like, get it out of the trash bin? Okay. Anyone listening to this that works at GoDaddy? You hear that? Fucking write that down. Show it to your boss. Why is there no trash bin to restore from? You suck. You suck, suck, suck. It doesn't work like that. There's no trash folder. Once it's gone, it's just gone. I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to completely rebuild the website from scratch. I was very lucky in one aspect. I had at least thought to back up all of my posts before I started messing around on the hosting folder. Being a web design newbie, I wasn't fully aware of the repercussions of screwing up a hosting account, so I just wanted to stay on the safe side, just in case. In other words, if I hadn't have done that, I would not only have needed to rebuild the entire website, but also rewrite every single blog post I had ever written. It also turned out that once I reinstalled WordPress onto the hosting server and restored the backup file, it had saved all of my images. In the end, it took me almost all of the remaining 4 days in Rome to get the website back online. This was 6 to 8 hour days sitting on the hostel bunk bed, typing away, and then another 1 to 2 hours busking on the street every evening. This was made tolerable by a few things. One, all of the aforementioned luxuries of first world plumbing. Two, the endless free coffee and biscuits offered in the mornings and delicious pasta dinners cooked by the staff each night. Three, the people that ran the hostel were endlessly generous and understanding. I was too busy working on the website to connect much with the other guests, but we got along really great with the staff there. Alex, the manager I mentioned a while back, really took a liking to us. Hostel policy was that all guests had to leave for a good portion of the day from noon until sometime in the evening so clean could be done. Most travelers didn't care since they spent most of their days out seeing the city anyway. We didn't have that luxury considering our dismal funds, so it would have been a real bummer that we couldn't stick around and get work done. This was a seriously weird rule that I never saw anywhere else, but it was strictly enforced. You had to leave at noon. Unless, apparently, you were us. When I told Alex about the website crash and how I would have to spend hours working to fix it, he told me, "No problem, man. You just come out and work in the lobby when they come to change your bed." Deal. He came into the room early one morning with a large, I mean seriously gigantic, bottle of liquor in his hand and cups in the other, and yelled with a huge smile, "Coffee and vodka?" Everyone got up and followed him to the kitchen where coffee and vodka evolved into 9 a.m. shots of vodka chased with coffee and more vodka. The cleaning staff joined in on this as well. Those guys were great too. They barely spoke English, they were Middle Eastern too, but they always managed to make me laugh. I watched one of them convince a girl one evening that she had to eat her dinner inside of the tiny elevator near the stairwell. "What do you mean? I cannot eat here?" the poor French girl innocently wondered. No, no, no. You go outside. Everyone in line here, they pay extra for the food. They eat inside. You eat in the elevator, yeah? But I don't understand. I thought the dinner was free for everyone. This exchange went on for a few minutes. She was confusedly walking towards the door with her plate of pasta when they finally told her that it was a joke. We were able, on one occasion, to make it out into the city to see the Colosseum, which we had all mandated as necessary before leaving. I had also wanted to see the Forum, Vatican, and countless other locations that my inner history nerd desperately yearned for, but it was not to be. I stood outside the Vatican and got some pictures from about 500 yards away. We didn't get to go inside of the Colosseum either, which was a disappointment. I wasn't expecting much at this point anyway, though. A month prior, I had decided I would definitely be returning to Europe to see all that I had originally wanted to see. To think that we would have been able to travel on our extremely limited budget and do all of the touristy things was incredibly naive in retrospect. We were also able to experience real Italian cuisine on one evening. This was thanks to a couple of my relatives who sent us $100 and told us we had to spend it on a nice meal of genuine Italian food or at least several nights in a hostel. Since our busking tips had already earned us the hostel stay, we opted for some delicious Italian food. Not surprisingly, Aaron attempted an alternative at first. I think I'll just save my portion of it and use it in Thailand. What do you mean? I asked. They gave us this money to go have a nice meal here. Well, I can't see the sense in spending the money here when it could go a hell of a lot farther in Southeast Asia, he replied. I understand what you're saying, but I just wouldn't feel right about that, for one. They gave us this money for a reason, man. Why can't you just enjoy yourself for once? You're in Rome, for fuck's sake. I mean, you guys can go out to eat. I'll just hold on to my portion. I finally put my foot down and said plainly, look, man, either you come with us and eat tonight or I'm dropping this whole $100 between me and Corey. It's not right for you to take the money and use it for something else. That's not why they gave it to us. He didn't get too upset, surprisingly, and eventually agreed to join us for the meal. We found a picturesque restaurant in a side alley near the Trevi Fountain and got whatever our vagabond hearts desired. I had the chicken with peppers and potatoes, Corey had pasta Alfredo, and Aaron ordered a shrimp and clam pasta. It was a fine meal that we washed down with a glass of local Roman wine each. Molto bene. Our last day in Europe was one to remember. We woke up early in the morning with two major mission objectives. Pick up a package at the local post office, which contained a new debit card, since mine was about to expire, and then, simple as it may sound, make it to the airport without missing our flight. We bade goodbye to our gracious, hostel staff members, including our friend Alex. Then we jumped on a few buses and made it to the post office without any trouble. By this point, we were navigating the chaotic Italian transit system with ease. We'd figured out how to read the signs, I had learnt to ask for directions from people in Italian, and most importantly, we'd perfected all the tricks of the trade for illegally hopping on and off the buses and trains. During the bus ride, we scribbled notes on postcards to our families back home and threw them into a box with a few cheap souvenirs. When we arrived at a post office next to the Vatican, we were told that my package would be at the main post office some distance away. So we hopped back on a bus and finally reached our destination after another hour or so. Let me tell you something about Poste Italiano. I would rather pull my testicles up over my head with a pair of pliers and staple them to my eyeballs than set foot in that cesspool of laziness ever again. If you've ever been to a Bureau of Motor Vehicles building in the United States, then you'll start hearing familiar similarities. You walk into this place and take a number. But wait, there are about 6 different lines, each of which are serving a specific purpose. Before you can take a number, you need to know which line to take a number for. Luckily, that part is signposted in English. There are about 100 other people there. For some reason in Rome, you have to pay your utility bills at the post office. Can you imagine the line for that? It was enormous. And guess what else was part of that line? You guessed it, package pickup. So now that you've imagined your local BMV complete with dirty, stinky foreigners, me, and screaming babies, except about 5 times as crowded, let's add one last interesting plot twist into the mix. Nobody speaks any English. Not one fucking employee there. By this point, I had learned a considerable amount of Italian, including, with much thanks to Adriano and Salvador, fuck, shit, bitch, and I am a little gay. Unfortunately, none of my vocabulary included the words mail, package, sent, or any other relevant post office terms. After waiting in line for about 45 minutes, it was finally my turn at the counter. Parle inglese? No. I searched for words. I looked at the little sign next to her, which showed both English and Italian words for this line's purpose. Picchetto? United States? She nodded her head and pointed to another line. Laguio. Over there. But this line says package pickup, I pleaded helplessly, knowing she couldn't understand a word I said. Picchetto Internazionale, Laguio, she said, again pointing to the other line. I looked at the other sign. Below several other listed purposes, there was an item I hadn't seen earlier. International package pickup. I was in the line for domestic pickup. Motherfucker. Deflated, I walked to the other line. Fortunately, it wasn't nearly as long as the first line I'd been in. After a relatively short wait, I approached the counter once again. It was manned by a short, plump Italian fellow, who struck me as the type of guy who could spend a Saturday masturbating to anime pornography and then pounding a case of Mountain Dew and a whole box of microwave taquitos. Or messaging women to tell them they should stop dating assholes and give a nice guy like him a chance, then start calling her a fat, ugly bitch when she politely says she's not interested. Or whatever the Italian version of a neckbeard is. I'm going to call him Jabba for simplicity's sake, and also because I'm still really mad at him, if you can't tell. Parli inglese? His face showed an expression of utter apathy. No. Picchetto Internazionale, United States? Si, he said, and then started rattling off a bunch of Italian. Non capisco, I replied helplessly. I don't understand. Hey, he thought. Maybe if this guy doesn't speak Italian and clearly didn't understand a goddamn word I just said, I should just say it faster. A bunch of gibberish flew from his fat mouth. I thought I smelled Slim Jims. Maybe it was combos. I'm not sure. I don't, non capisco, I repeated. I was starting to become exasperated. Luckily, a woman behind me in line came to the rescue. Excuse me, she cut in. I speak some English, maybe I can help? He is asking for a package number. Thank you so much. I wanted to hug her. Here I should interject for a moment to clarify the process of package mailing between the U.S. and Italy. My sweet mom Tracy had mailed the package to me some 5 weeks prior from her local post office in Ohio. The tracking number given to her would track the package until it left the United States, she was told. Once that happened, it was assigned a new tracking number within the Italian Post Service, to which she would not have access. I pulled up the tracking number that had been emailed to me by my mother when she sent the package, and I showed it to Jabba. His face remained expressionless as he tore off some more Italian to the woman now standing next to me. I say this not Italian tracking number. I know that, but there's no way for me to look for that number. It just doesn't give it to me. See if he can look up my package by name, could you? She asked. He looked at me. No. Address? She translated. No. Then he said some more in Italian. I say the package is not here. He hasn't even looked! I was incredulous. He hasn't even touched the computer! Can you Can you ask him if he can just go in the back and look for it? It was sent over a month ago. I know it's here. She asked, and Jabba, the fat, greasy fuck, just sat there and shook his floppy-jowled head again.